Welcome to the new inaugural No Ripcord podcast. I'm features editor Joe Rivers, and I'm here with editor-in-chief David Coleman.
Hey.
Managing editor Juan Edgardo Rodriguez.
Hello.
And staff writer Matt Montgomery.
Hello.
Okay, so this is a six-month roundup, if you like, of the best of 2011. So, first question, straight off the bat, really. Favourite albums of the year so far? Start with Dave.
Oh, where to put me on the spot? I actually think, for me, it's probably a three-horse race at the moment between the PJ Harvey album, which has been there pretty much from the start of the year, the Kurt Vile album, and also the Thurston Moore album as well. They're probably the three that stand out most for me.
The Kurt Vile one, was that the one that you were not so keen on to start with and has grown on you?
That's right. It was, you know, the sort of typical grower, really. I began pretty much loathing it. But there was just that one song, Jesus Fever, that I kept coming back to, quite begrudgingly initially. And I think I must have listened to it about 20 times before I actually settled on a score that I was going to give it for the review, which in the end was 9 out of 10. And I think it's a great album. I keep dipping back into it as the year goes on.
Okay, so Juan, what about you?
Okay, basically my top three, obviously, just like David, PJ Harvey is right there on top. Followed by perhaps the Fleet Foxes album. I know Joe likes that one. And actually, third place right now is the new Ice Age album. That was sort of a surprise for me. So that's basically my top three right there.
You reviewed the PJ Harvey album for No Ripcord, didn't you?
I recorded all those three albums, actually.
Okay.
And that was your first, I think that was your first 10 on the site, wasn't it? You'd never awarded a 10 before, am I right?
I had given a 10 to an REM reissue of Fables of the Reconstruction, but it was my first official 10
for a new release,
yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, when I saw that, I thought, well, he's pretty tight generally. He never gives out good scores, so this is going to be worth listening to. And it was.
Okay, Matt, and how about you? And have you ever given a 10 before?
You know, I'm not sure I've actually ever given a 10. I'm constantly tempted to give a 10 to something that doesn't deserve it just for the sake of doing it, but I don't think that's a good reason
to give
a 10.
No, you should not do that. No.
my top this year, basically what you guys have said, I kind of fall in line with. I'm still really liking the Destroyer album. It's grown on me in some ways and kind of faded off in some other ways, so it's sort of balanced out. The Thurston Moore album I've actually really, really grown to like a lot. I haven't taken the time to absorb some of these other things that have come out in recent weeks. Bon Iver is one that I think I'll probably really enjoy, but it just hasn't hit yet.
I'm going to be purposely controversial now and just say that Bon Iver is just something that I just don't get at all. I haven't heard the new album, but I just found the first one unutterably dull, really. I was goaded into buying it by No Ripcord, really. The praise that came from No Ripcord. It's made me think that, you know what, it's not them that's wrong, it's me. It must be me that's wrong.
I
bought it, and apart from one or two tracks, I just, it stayed on my iPod for, I don't know, a few months, just sort of out of sympathy, really, and then I thought, I'm not listening to this. I'm not enjoying this. This has to go, and I haven't missed it since, really.
I think the new one is quite a big step forward for me, though. While it doesn't have the sort of the obvious standout track, it's a more consistent album. It's a bit more colourful, and just a little bit more inviting as well. I think.
So what would you say is the obvious standout track from the previous one then?
I think coming to it at first couple of listens, probably Skinny Love, I think.
That's the one that made me not fall asleep, if I'm honest.
Yeah, that was the first one I liked.
Yeah, that was literally listenable, that one. That was yeah. But if I will just sort of step away from moaning about people who go to the woods to record albums, I think I will again be contrary and say my favourites of the year so far. First off, the James Blake album, which was almost an obvious choice because it was just getting so much praise even before it came out. It had so much praise before it even came out that there was also a backlash still before it even came out. But I just think it's incredibly inventive, and I feel that that's going to get diminished, if you like, because it's the kind of music that doesn't, in my opinion at least, doesn't translate fantastically to a live setting. And from what I've heard of live sets at Glastonbury and so on, I'm not enormously impressed with what he's doing, but I think it may be much more of a studio thing than a live thing, because it's such intricate, quiet music, if you like. Other than that, I would say, despite my annoyance at the capitalization of the name, the Tune Yards album is fantastically good.
True. I should have said that. That's probably up there in my top three or four, definitely, as well.
Yeah,
fantastic album.
It's I resisted it just based on the capitalization of the name initially, but other than that, something that got a good review on No Ripcord, actually, but hasn't had the praise elsewhere, if you like, the Bill Evans and Aidan Moffat album. I'm quite a big...
Bill Wells.
Bill Wells and Aidan Moffat album. I'm a big Arab Strap fan anyway, but I think that really is fantastic. And also the Cat's Eyes album. I don't know if any of you have heard that. But
yes,
it's almost a sort of 60s girl group / shoegaze project, if you like, from Faris Badwin of the Horrors. I'm not even a particularly big Horrors fan, although I hear their new album is fantastic. But that album, it's also about 26 minutes long, which is quite enough.
It's perfect.
it's almost too perfect. I mean, I'm a fan of albums that aren't too long. I mean, I was listening to the Tyler the Creator album yesterday, which is, we may get onto that later. But it's whatever you think of it, it's 75 minutes long, which is far too long.
That doesn't even fit on a CD.
Is it not? It might be 70 minutes long. It's on a CD. But I think it's far too long for an album, whereas...
Yeah.
I would say 35 to 40 minutes. There's a feature in this somewhere. 35 to 40 minutes is the perfect length for an album, but the Cat's Eyes album is almost too perfect. In about 26, 28 minutes, it leaves you wanting more without feeling shortchanged, I'd say.
That one has been growing on me, and I think that Mark Ronson also produced it, which I'm not a big fan of, but I think he did a great job with that album.
I don't know if that's... I have no idea of that, but he's very backward-looking in a good way, if you like, in his production. And also, did he not produce the current Black Lips album as well? I'm looking for someone to back me up here, but it's not forthcoming. But
no, sorry.
No, which...
Not a fan of that band.
Again, no, I'm not a particular fan, but from what I've heard and read, he's... very much preserved the sort of 60s Iggy and the Stooges garage sound to that.
Yeah, I actually heard that Black Lips album. I mean, with the Black Lips, it's not terribly offensive, but it's not anything, you know, groundbreaking either, which is sort of what I'm feeling with garage bands lately, I guess.
I just find them so juvenile. They're just irritatingly... immature, I think. I can't stand them.
Is that not their USP, though? They're just, you know, they are doing, well, as juvenile and and what have you as you find them. At the moment, there is no one else really doing that, so that they fulfill that void. That
possibly for a reason.
Well, yeah, I'm just playing devil's advocate here, but you know, that's my hastily sketched out theory on them.
I think you're probably right. I think it's probably, you know, it is probably what they're going for, but I don't like it.
Okay. Well, I guess we can call that section one done, and with the overwhelming conclusion that I was right on something. So, if we go to now surprises of the year, what are the albums that have really taken you that you didn't expect to like, possibly, or artists that have come out of left field to create something fantastic? I'm going to look to Matt initially on this one and put you on the spot and maybe ask of something there.
You know, some there have been a few surprises. Part of the surprise for me is that these last 2 or 3 months have seen a lot of releases, but I haven't seen a lot that I've really fallen in love with, especially not in the way that some of these first 4 or so months, some of the releases from those times did. One album that kind of surprised me was the Yuck album, which I really enjoyed, but was torn by their name.
It's a horrific name.
Yeah, it's probably one of the worst I've heard recently. But really, it hasn't been a completely surprising year for me at all.
Okay. Juan?
You know, just looking at basically everything I've heard, I guess, I don't know if it's much of a surprise, but I've been revisiting the new Crystal Stilts album, I think. And we're going back to the concept of garage albums here, which is sort of contradictory, but I think it's a really good classic album in terms of how it's just evoking the shadows of 60s pop and 60s psych pop from the Sonics and all these great bands that came from that era. And I guess it's that sort of album that I can just digest in little snippets. I mean, it's not an album that I'll listen all the way through, but I just think it's really well done. I mean, it's good pop jangle, and it also has all these frantic psychedelic touches, and I'm liking it. I'm liking it even more every time I listen to it.
That's quite an interesting debate there. You say about albums that you can digest in snippets rather than full-length ones. Is that, do you think, a trend that's happening throughout records, that there are things that are more suited to one or two tracks, you know, the sort of iTunes era, if you like, of downloading individual things rather than listening to an album as a whole?
Well, definitely. I mean, coming from someone who still likes the traditional form of listening to an album, I guess this is one of those where I can sort of make an exception. And still, I mean, I can still listen to this album, and it sounds really cohesive to me. But it's just that perhaps if I'm not in the mood to listen to something that has this really, like, fuming reverb all the time for almost 40 minutes, I mean, I just, like, go back to all this, to, you know, to their more lively, you know, boogies, you could say, because some of these songs have that sort of nice, they have that nice feel to it. So, you know, it's sort of like a one-two punch there.
And they are worth overlooking the abundance of acts that have the word crystal in their name, are you saying?
That is, yeah, I think they should be the best, some of the best in terms of bands with the name Crystal.
would you say they are the best act with the name, with the word Crystal in their name? Because I, you know, I'm quite a fan of Crystal Castles. So would you say they're better than them?
I do like some songs by the Crystal Castles, but it's not really my bag, I guess.
I inadvertently saw the Crystal Castles at a festival, although that very much is a story for possibly another podcast. But, Dave.
Surprises
of the year.
I think for me, the big surprises are the well, two of the three albums I mentioned in the first part, the PJ Harvey and the Kurt Vile albums, because I was not a big fan of either of those acts coming into it, and yet they've ended up sort of top of the tree for me so far. But obviously it would be pretty dull to talk about those again. So I would say probably aside from that, that the most sort of refreshing surprise has been the Phoenix Foundation album, which is one of those delightful occasions where I logged onto the website, read one of our own reviews, listened to an album and completely agreed with it. I think it's a fantastic album. I've been living with it for 4 or 5 months, but I think it's just perfect for this time of the year, perfect for early summer, and I think it's a fantastic commuting album as well. I've got a lot of mileage from that, driving into work in the mornings. Just a beautiful, gently psychedelic album. Aside from that, also the Yuck album that Matt mentioned, again, not just the name, but the sort of repulsive artwork as well.
Again, if the name wasn't bad enough, I think is, yes.
And also the fact that everything I read about that band was saying how much of a sort of rip-off that they were and how, you know, how derivative the whole thing was.
Yeah,
actually
also,
listening.
Also formed from the ashes of Cajun Dance Party doesn't really sort of, fill the heart with glee as well.
But I just think it's a fantastic listen. It doesn't do anything new, but it does a lot of the things that I like about sort of early 90s indie rock really, really, really well. And I think it's pretty great, actually. It's pretty high on my sort of current first half of the year list, definitely.
It's interesting, because I have a theory that, you know, most sort of new music, if you like, is embraced by those between the ages of, say, 15 and 35, and because of that, there is a 20-year cycle on anything, because once you get past that window, if you like, then you can kind of recycle what's gone before, because the people who are embracing new music don't realise that. So by that token, there is a 20-year cycle on new music, on revivals, and so forth, and therefore Yuck can get away with reproducing the music of, say, Nirvana, Dinosaur Jr., that sort of thing, because the people who were into them at the time, the vast majority of them, have kind of given up trying to keep up anyway. I mean, I know...
What are you saying?
Well, I'm, you know, okay, we're...
You're generalising. But...
I'm very much generalising, yes, I completely am, but outside of journalistic circles, if you like, keeping up with what is current and so forth is more the preserve of the under 35s, maybe, or under 40s, or put a number on it, but it's not done by everyone. So I think once you reach a certain stage, you can almost get away with pilfering, pickpocketing and stealing from the past to an extent, because it's not that it's not going to be noticed, but it's far enough in the past that people are going to think it's fresh and new.
Yeah. I mean, that'd be interesting. I haven't seen a band like Yuck Live or another of the band's sort of borrowing tricks from that era, but I'd be interested to see what the demographic is at their shows. Is it the sort of first time, you know, Dinosaur Jr. fans who are going to see a band that evokes their, you know, university heyday, or is it young people who've heard these records off their parents or their older brothers who are into it, or is it just new music fans checking out the thing that the journalists of that age might be writing about and recommending? I don't know, really.
I mean, I haven't seen Yuck, but as a guess, I would say it is the sort of the teenagers getting into new music and thinking this band are great without knowing the context, because with the internet, with media as prevalent as it is, you can't really not know what's gone on in the past. But I would still claim that the people going to see Yuck experiencing it as a first time thing, if you like, and it Maybe I'm saying this because it neatly packages into my 20-year theory, and I'm just trying to push that a bit too much. But
I like the theory, though. It's a nice theory. There's a feature in that, I think.
There is, and my theory is true, I'm very excited about the Suede revival in 18 months' time, because that's when I'm really going to sort of come to the fore.
That's probably when I'm going to hang up my keyboard and call it a day, I think.
Really? Are we going to have to record a special... Suede podcast where I sing their praises whilst you denounce them?
You can record it, but I won't be there.
Really? So there really is, right? There's you know we do those debate articles, right? Dave, you and I, Suede.
Okay, it's on.
It's on. It's on. I will sing the praises of Suede to the point where it would appear that I'm a member of Brett Anderson's family.
That's slightly uncomfortable, but okay, we'll do it.
I could have said worse, but okay.
You could. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Okay. If we are coming to me on that, I think the one, and possibly the one that I missed out from Albums of the Year, and would say as a surprise. I'm going to, as No Ripcord's president, lover of pop and chart music, much to the chagrin of people around me, I will say the KTB album. I'm slightly loath to say this, as I saw KTB yesterday, and she was very disappointing. But the album itself, as a listening experience, if you like, is very rewarding, as much that it's very fun, it's enjoyable, it takes you to a place where you can imagine that it's 1 o'clock on a Friday morning, or Saturday morning, if you like, and you're so entrenched in enjoying yourself and the fun that you're having that you actually forget how late it is, and you're just having great fun where you are. And it's that sort of album, in that it deals with going on a night out, getting ready for a night out, kicking out of a nightclub, or coming back to somebody's house for a good time and some pre-club drinks. And I don't know, maybe I'm sort of intellectualizing something which is incredibly very simple, but to me, I can hear, the silence is deafening to this, but
no,
to my response, but I gave the KTB album a 9 out of 10 rating, and I will stick by it. And it's probably best if you go to noripcord.com and read that rather than listen to me try and explain it to a trio of non-believers.
I wouldn't say I was a non-believer, to be fair, just to rescue you from that. From that awkward silence.
The hole I was digging was getting deeper.
Let me step in and take that shovel out of your hands.
Thank you very much.
I was a non-believer until I read your review, and I thought, well, you know, I've got to do the guy a favour and at least listen to it. And I checked it out, and I agree. I think it's, you know, it's pretty high quality pop music, which I wasn't expecting, given, I guess, the sort of the way it's packaged up, the album artwork, her name that she chooses to record under. You're expecting something quite teen orientated, quite superficial.
There's no relation to Mel B from the Spice Girls, in case you were wondering.
Thank God. And I thought I was going to get something that there'd be maybe three singles and then some dreadful filler, you know, like a sort of Jessie J or something like that. But it's
there are no great singles on a Jessie J album. Just before
I didn't say great. I said three singles. Please don't let that be taken out of context.
Yeah. Okay.
Three singles and then some superficial crap like you get on a lot of pop albums, but not all. And I think this is one of the good ones. I think there's definitely a time and a place for it.
Okay. I'm baffled that someone's agreed with me or something. And also, just before we move on, I think I don't know if any of you heard the Patrick Wolf album, but I enjoyed that far more than I was expecting to as well.
I haven't heard that one yet.
No? Okay. Well, it's really good. Okay, so moving on. I think the thing we were planning on talking about next was disappointments, albums that didn't quite hit the heights what we're expecting in 2011. Just to buck with tradition, I might go first on this one. And I think I'm going to have quite a big list, actually, unfortunately. I might start... Oh, where should I start? Maybe chip in if you feel like saying something on this, but Dutch Uncles, anyone?
I haven't heard it.
No? Yeah. Okay. The album's called Cadenza. The title track is fantastic. And to me, I listened to the album and it really didn't do anything for me.
Last time we talked, was this an album that you were talking about being excited about?
It may have been. I'm not sure, but the lead track, Cadenza, is fantastic, but it's the kind of track where it goes into strange time signatures and all sorts, but it seems quite a natural thing to do, and mm-hmm. I think that's fantastic. And then the rest of the album, it seems like it's going into strange time signatures in an attempt to be willfully obscure. And there are plenty of people who'll disagree with me on this, but it's just not quite my bag, if you like. And then, without wishing to rile lots of people, I think Elbow and Radiohead are the two names that really sort of stick out for me.
Two heavy words, huh?
Yeah, in terms of... Yeah, I mean, whatever you think of previous, their history, both Elbow and Radiohead, I absolutely adored their previous albums. In Rainbows, I know, wasn't everyone's idea of a good time, if you like, but In Rainbows was and remains my favourite Radiohead album. Whereas Elbow's Seldom Seen Kid, I also think is the best Elbow album. And then this year, The King of Limbs and Build a Rocket Boys just haven't quite captured my imagination in the same way. I'll take that silence as agreement.
Yeah, I was waiting for a sort of torrent of justification for that. Fantastic. Just let it hang there. Yeah, I mean I agree. Actually, I've never been a big Elbow fan. Always been a big Radiohead fan. I haven't heard the Elbow one apart from the singles. Just not a great deal of interest in them, really, for me. Which controversial in itself. But Radiohead, I haven't listened to for 3 months, and I can't see myself going back to that album. It just didn't connect for me. There was nothing inviting about it. Not even a couple of killer tracks that just the sort of forced me to get into it. I was excited. Yeah. I listened, and then I just left it, and I haven't missed it.
That's the thing, they created the excitement with how it was released, and as I say, I was very excited as well, and I wrote the review for No Ripcord, I gave it 6 out of 10, and it was almost, I wrote it and then sat back and waited for the barrage of abuse, and it just didn't really come, because I think everyone, well, I'm claiming here to speak for everyone, but I wrote it, I sat back, I waited for the abuse to pour in, and just, it almost seemed everyone just kind of went, well, yeah, we're excited too, and it didn't happen. They're still Radiohead. They're still great. We're still looking forward to the next record. But as a stopgap, it's not really what we're after.
I agree. Sorry for jumping in. I actually think there was such a rush to get the first review out there, to get an early response, that a lot of the people that reviewed it within the first couple of days, dished out the eights and the nines out of ten.
Oh yeah, the superlatives came.
Yeah. Yeah, wrote the superlatives. And I'd be interested to know how many of those people are still loving this album, still counting it amongst the year's best and stand by what they wrote then. Whereas I think we were right to sit back, try and soak it up for a little while, let the hype die down,
It'll be then, very interesting to see where that comes in our top 50 at the end of the year.
It's not in my top 30 at the moment. It's way outside.
You know, I just wanted to touch upon Joe's comment on Albo, because, you know, when you write about music, there comes a time where you get sort of desensitized, in a sense, because you listen to so many albums, so many, and that Albo album is one of those that I have refused to download it until I buy it, because I'm a pretty solid Albo fan, you could say, and I guess it's sort of discouraging to hear this, because I do like the two hits that they've been playing around, but I guess I still have this, you know, sense of I really have these expectations and I want them to fulfill them for me, and I still have, there's still that element of surprise, I guess you could say. So I guess I could follow upon you with that. I mean, when I buy it eventually.
Have you not heard the album then?
I haven't yet. I'm just waiting to buy it.
I can understand where you're coming from, in that there, I don't think there's any band that I want to be as good as I do Elbow, because of what's gone before, because without resorting to sort of Dave Grohl style cliche, they're really nice people, and from what you hear, and I want their albums to be really good, but there's all their romanticism and the genuine touching moments from their previous albums, and the fact they kind of can speak to you in a way that you didn't know you wanted to be spoken to, almost, if you like. They still all exist, but I can't put my finger on it, and from that I'm glad I didn't write the review myself, actually. I can't quite put my finger on it. There's just something not
there.
I think
Joe wrote the review, didn't he?
Joe Iliff, yeah. And I think he's a big fan, and that's nice for him. But yeah, there's just something indefinable to me, not quite there. It's to me, it sounds a bit like they've taken stock and gone, okay, our previous four albums really successful, why were they successful, let's distill that and try and repeat it. And sometimes that works, and sometimes I'm gonna not offer anything more profound than there's not something there.
I think it's the first time they've, I mean, again, I haven't heard the album, I'm not a big fan, but it's the first time they've recorded something with those expectations because of the commercial success of last time. So while they're always pretty critically successful, there wasn't that pressure to deliver like there was this time.
I mean, even from that, I mean, before Asleep in the Back, which I think was 2001 off the top of my head, they'd been together for around 10 years then.
Mm-hmm.
So they're a band that have been plodding along, ploughing their own furrow quite happily for 15 years, and then all of a sudden there is critical, and I would imagine from their record company, expectation as well to do something good and commercial. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, maybe they're struggling on that, maybe I'm wrong. But before I hand over to someone else, I'm just going to say my other disappointment of the year is the Jamie Woon album, which again did quite well on a Ripcord, an 8 out of 10, I think, from, again, Joe Iliff. But has anyone else heard that, or am I...
I have, yeah. I think it's quite a lightweight album. It sounds,
yes,
very good.
Very
it's beautiful, but lacking a bit of substance for me. I thought it was more in the sort of 6 out of 10 territory.
Yeah, I'd very much agree with that. I mean, the single Nightdale, which came out November or December last year, I think, I really, really loved. And thanks to iTunes, I'm buying singles again, and that was one of the ones I've bought. And so was very much looking forward to that album. And when it came out, I actually wrote this as a comment on Joe's review, but I think it sounds like Justin Timberlake's Future Sex Love Sounds, which, you know, isn't a bad album, but isn't really, you know, it's fine if you're going to buy MySpace in, you know, 8 years' time, but it's not really what you're after from the great hope of British music, you know, top five in BBC Sound of 2011. And I was thinking, after having heard the James Blake album and fall in love with that and thinking it was incredibly inventive, I was just a bit disappointed of how safe, if you like, the Jamie Ruin album was.
Mm-hmm. It tells you something about the BBC's sound of List in general, really. I think James Blake should have won that if they'd asked the right people.
More than Jesse J. I
think you would have.
Well, I don't know about you, but I'm yet to be asked for my vote on the sound of BBC Sound Of. But I think if you go to the dictionary and look up self-fulfilling prophecy, I'd imagine that the top five of whatever year's BBC Sound Off poll will come because it's as interesting and actually informative as it is. They just ask lots of industry tastemakers and the people who know where the money's being thrown mm-hmm. to name who you think will be big, who will be successful. And funnily enough, if you have lots of money thrown at you, as a rule, you'll do quite well. But actually, it's quite entertaining to look through BBC Sound Off polls from previous years to see who was hotly tipped and who didn't make it. Not in a mean way, but just in a kind of the year that Little Boots won and Florence and the Machine was about fourth is quite an interesting indictment of the tastemaker's art, if you like.
Absolutely.
Okay, so Dave, disappointments of the year.
I'll keep it brief. The big disappointments for me have been not that I had high hopes for it, but the Strokes album I thought was pretty dull, pretty predictable, pretty boring. Ockerville River, a huge fan of that band, going back over the last 3-4 albums. For some reason, the excitement wasn't there when this one came out. I put my name forward to review it, but my heart was never in it. And when I heard it, I'm just not warm to it at all. I just feel they're treading the same ground. You know, it's all very clever, all very intricate, but just, you know, just the same old, really. I think that reaches a point where you own enough records by a band to just feel that actually you don't really need any more. You might as well just listen to the old ones, and that's where I'm at with them now.
I would agree with that very much. There's you know, without wishing to labour the point, there's a feature in that as well, and I'm going to call it Stereo Lab. And there's just, you reach a point where, yeah, exactly. There are bands that you like what they do, you kind of appreciate that, but you know that if you buy a new album by them, it's just going to be reworkings of previous tracks almost.
Mm-hmm. Some bands, you know, have a long career and keep you coming back for more, like Sonic Youth. You know, they had a little bit of a lull, but I could happily own, you know, 10 Sonic Youth albums and get something different from each of them, but not Ockerville River. You know, the changes are too subtle from record to record, and while this may not be a bad one, I just don't want to listen to it.
Okay, Matt, how about you?
Some of the big disappointments for me weren't that they were particularly bad albums, just terribly underwhelming. Like the new Fleet Foxes album, I just can't get excited about it. And maybe it's a personal flaw. Maybe I've done something wrong in a past life. I have no clue. But things like the new Fleet Foxes.
If it's a personal flaw, we suffer from the same flaw, so I wouldn't worry too much about it.
Yeah, it's albums like that. The new Bill Callahan album, which I want to love, I just haven't. Maybe it hasn't caught me right. Same with the new Radiohead. The Strokes is another good example. There's a lot that I thought was pretty promising, the new Explosions in the Sky, but it all sort of blends together and it doesn't capture my interest in any meaningful way.
Okay, and Juan?
Okay, I have a few choices. I mean, the new Acid House Kings album, I mean, I do like that Swedish band a lot. I mean, I think it's one of those bands that actually give me hope for twee pop in a sense, but this album is a big retrograde for me. I mean, I think that it just sounds like a bunch of campfire songs for people who wear Argyle sweaters. I mean, I don't know.
It sounds awesome.
Yeah, where can we download this?
Yeah, I just found it really offensive that they just went in a really casual route. I mean, I thought that this was the band that would eventually evolve, and they're much more mature now, and they sound even more juvenile going back to that. And I'm so disappointed by it. Same goes for Art Brut. I mean, Art Brut is a band that started really, really strong at first. And they're just treading right now. I mean, that last album, it just sounds dirty and nihilistic and not in a good way. It just sounds defeated. It sounds like Eddie Argos, you know, doesn't have much inspiration anymore in terms of songwriting.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Yeah. Same goes for Thurston Moore. I'm not that big a fan of this new one, which is a bit disappointing for me because I really liked his Three Sons Out of the Academy, but I think this sounds like a second part. Maybe I haven't dug through it as much as I'd like, but I was a bit underwhelmed by it. And I guess finally, I didn't have high hopes for this band. I knew they were going to do this type of album eventually, but the New Times New Viking album is really underwhelming. I think. Considerably. I even went on defense with this in my review. I mean, it feels like they're backstabbing their own lo-fi aesthetic, which I actually thought they did pretty well, and by doing something different, and it just doesn't work for me.
Can I throw one more in? Because everyone else is just, you know, unloaded a lot of...
piling in.
Yeah, and I feel a bit left out, only naming two. So I would like to throw in The Pains of Being Pure at Heart, which Matt reviewed, and you kind of liked it, I think. It was a fairly solid review, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, I was really disappointed by it. Aside from a couple of tracks, I thought it was, again, a step back. But in a sense, it's nice to see a band who've delivered a strong debut with a particular sound, just taking a risk and trying to do something else. So while it's not an album I enjoyed, you've got to respect that they at least had the guts to change it up and try something new.
I think there's another, without wishing to labour the point yet again, there's another feature in that, which is called bands that are better in theory than in practice. And I would put The Pains of Being Pure at Heart in that. Everything I read about them makes me think they'd be my favourite band ever. Then I listen to them and they just leave me completely cold. There's just something not quite there where there should be.
We've basically got our features lined up for the next 6 months, so it's been a nice surprise.
Yes, if the three of you could write them, that would be fantastic. Okay, I think that might be as good a point as any to leave that. So from me, Joe Rivers, David Coleman, Juan Rodriguez, and Matt Montgomery, I think that might be goodbye. Before then, just to point out our Facebook page for No Ripcord, also our Twitter account, which is at No Ripcord, and our collaborative playlist feature, which will be appearing on the website in the next couple of days, 21st Century Playlist. Anything else that I might have forgotten, people?
Just to say that you can log onto the Facebook one at facebook.com/No Ripcord Magazine now. We do have a MySpace page, but you're probably not using MySpace. And the page hasn't been updated for about a decade anyway. But
if you're Justin Timberlake, log into myspace.com/No Ripcord Magazine.
That's correct. You can actually buy T-shirts from that very page. It's the only place to get No Ripcord merchandise. And I hear they're very, very, very popular, aren't they, Joe?
They are stylish and fashionable, yet practical.
The perfect T-shirt, indeed.
Yeah, for the one you love, if their birthday is coming up or something.
Yeah, we even do trucker caps for those on a slightly tighter budget as well, so there's really no excuse not to sport the No Ripcord logo this summer.
And on that bombshell, I think we could wrap it up there and say thank you very much for listening, and hopefully we shall hear from you soon.
Okay, thanks for listening.